starting up is, I guess, what they're doing again afresh up at the Gold Coast Suns with the AFL's newest senior coach, and very happy to have him on the line for a bit of a chat about him and about his new club. Very good morning to you, Stuart Dew.
How are you going?
Yeah, very well, thanks. How are you enjoying your first pre-season in the driver's seat?
I'm really enjoying it. Fantastic to get to know 45 players and so many staff. But it's been fantastic. Lots of good people working out, who fits in where at the footy club, and then trying to get everyone aligned.
You've been an assistant for a long time, so there wouldn't be much, I'd assume, that would be a shock to you. But is there anything that has surprised you in terms of the difference just being the senior coach to an assistant?
No surprise. I think, I guess I was lucky enough at Sydney to have a lot of exposure to many things that assistants don't often get. So in my last 3 or 4 years, I was heavily involved with John Longmire and Dean Moore and Tom Harley. So just the amount of things that come across your desk and, you've obviously got to deal with it, and everyone wants a piece of you. So just making sure you're efficient with that, and decision making's pretty quick. You can't take too long because then things just keep coming. It's like a funnel.
I suppose in terms of logistics, there'd be a bigger difference, not so much in how you coach the players, but probably coaching the coaches. Is that a fair enough comment?
To be fair to them, they want good clarity around what's expected of them. So I'll spend as much time with the players as I have with the coaching group and making sure I get to know their style, so they're aware of what I'm after, so then they can implement their job. So I've been really, really pleased with the enthusiasm that the coaching group have got. They're thirsty for work and want to know, okay, how do we get going and how do we get aligned and get the footy club going in the right direction? So it's a good observation because probably my first week I was thinking players, and then, jumped into the coaches pretty quickly after that as well.
And it would be a different sort of mindset you'd have to take in your discussions with them too, because you're talking about guys who have extensive playing backgrounds and in some cases extensive coaching backgrounds.
Yeah, and I'm keen to know where they see their strengths. I think, a lot of the best coaches have good self-awareness. So what are their strengths? What do they bring to the table? And, we're currently, we're setting up a platform where we'll all be going through our, making sure that we're looking at what our strengths are, how do we improve them, making sure we bring our strengths. So I think, footy clubs spend a lot of time with their players and how to make them better, a better performer. So we're keen as a footy club to make sure we're working with the coaches as well, and they're not just forgotten and left to just grind away the season.
The club and yourself are in an interesting stage of development, I guess, and sort of a double-edged sword. I mean, I'm not sort of gilding the lily to say it's a tough task given how Gold Coast performed over the last couple of years, but the obvious upside too is you must feel like you've got a bit of a blank canvas in terms of the side and list you want to create.
Yeah, I think we do. And obviously there's been some key appointments in senior roles, so really spending time with John Haynes, who's come on as GM of footy, and Craig Cameron, the list manager. So we're spending a lot of time together to work out, okay, what's the footy club look like now, and where do we want it to be in 3 or 4 years? And I think that is important. It is a bit of a blank canvas in terms of we can really create a new environment, and we're trying to set about doing that now.
And I guess a key in creating that blank canvas is the departure of Gary Ablett, who, probably to an unhealthy degree was symbolic, I guess, of the Gold Coast Suns. Now, obviously, you weren't happy about losing his playing services, but it's pretty obvious the upside that is involved with that as well, wasn't it?
Oh, I think, he's the most decorated player across the 7 years, and four-time Best and Fairest winner, and won a Brownlow whilst at the footy club. So he'll leave a big hole out on the ground. And I think from a performance sense, the message to the players has been that just creates an opportunity for someone else or others to fill that gap. And from a club point of view, I think, the situation Gary was in where he would have liked to have been traded the year before and made that same request. So I think in times you've got to have some empathy around where people's situations change, and I think as a footy club we were happy to get that done for him, but also for us. And I think players need to understand that whilst we do understand situations change, it needs to be fair and reasonable, and I think we got there in the end.
Now, speaking of that opportunity, a couple of guys in interesting stages given their returns from injury, Michael Barlow and Sam Day. Just a quick word on how either of those guys are tracking.
Yeah, so Michael's training unrestricted. I obviously watched from afar, like most people when he's at Fremantle coming back from that first horrific broken leg.
Yeah.
This one wasn't as bad, but a broken leg and you've got to come back from it, and certainly where he's at in his career, he's presented fantastically, and no question there. If I hadn't seen any reports last year, you wouldn't have known that he'd been injured. So he'll be ready for selection. Sam Day obviously had a really significant injury. We went a little bit slow with him pre-Christmas as we planned, but he's now joining into skills and he's gaining confidence. I mean, for a big fella to have a injury like he did that was, you know, related to sort of car accident type stuff, it is significant, so we're working on just rebuilding his confidence, and he's doing his part in that.
I was going to ask you that question about the psychology of that, because it did seem, my memory of it is, it was such an innocuous-looking thing and yet devastating impact. So it's as much about the mental recovery as the physical in one sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're doing certain things with Sam. You know, we'll get some isolated vision of him at training to make sure that, you know, we see him moving really well. And just to make sure that he, you know, what he's feeling marries up with the vision, because I guess a confidence thing is how players feel, and we're just trying to give him the confidence that what we see, he's really on track, and I think Sam's making, I guess, great leaps with that.
Another one about opportunity, Pierce Hanley. Now, again, I find him an interesting case study, if you like, because he's sort of made that name coming off halfback initially, but broke his hand in the International Rules Series, but I understand there's a feeling he might play a lot more of a midfield role this year.
Yeah, at times, and it was purely just, I guess, on the back of he's played a little bit of midfield last year, but
yeah,
he had a horrible year personally. But I think we just didn't want to close the door on it. Obviously, his strength is off half-back, and I know from an opposition coach point of view, when Pierce Hanley's on fire at half-back, he gives you some real headaches, so it'll be that balance of where do we need him at the time. I think it'll be a luxury if we're able to put him into the midfield, because he has a bit of steel, and he's got the personality for a backline player that, you know, no matter whether the oppos kick three or four goals, they're going to give you the same effort every time. So it's going to be weighing that up. It's a good headache to have.
Yeah. We were talking earlier today about free agency and that almost sort of inevitable speculation about players and where they might end up. Rory Sloane's one of the ones we appear to be set to talk about all year. The other obvious one is Tom Lynch. Have you sort of pondered how you're going to deal with that question publicly? Because you're going to get asked it an awful lot, I suspect.
Yeah. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about how I answer it, because there's not a lot of information I can give. I guess, like all, you know, Damien Hardwick last year, it's all I can say is that as a footy club, and what I consider the newcomer, is Tom Lynch is really invested in the footy club and the success of the footy club, and that's all I've seen. And my job really is to create an environment where he wants to be part of it. So I'm not going to be able to speculate on timelines. That's not for me to say, but I guess I'm going to be answering it the same, and everyone's probably going to be sick of hearing it as much as I'll get sick of getting asked, because as soon as there's any news, obviously everyone's going to know, but until then, I think we'll be giving the same answer, because that's the facts.
I'll give you a bit of media management advice 101. I'd write down a sentence that you use now, and subsequent times you're asked, just say, refer to answer number 63, you know, save yourself a few words.
I'll try and change it up just for everyone's sake.
One I wanted to ask you was, I reckon you looked at the Suns last year and you can see an obvious level of talent, but they seem to really lack a mental resilience factor. There are a number of games that they were in for a half and then really fell away badly. It's an easy one to talk about improving that, harder to actually do it logistically. How do you go about improving that on the track and in the classroom, if you like?
think it's recognising at times when, and you know, even in my time at Sydney in the last couple of years, we noticed it is a real, who's the most resilient team, and even, you know, with Sydney's list at times, teams are able to whack four or five goals on, and then it's, okay, can they get it back, and it's putting them, they'll get in those situations, then it's reviewing those situations, and who did what at what moment to help shift momentum. So I think number one, it's an acknowledgement that the whole competition wrestles with momentum now, and any team, whether you're 18th or first, can get goals scored against them really quickly, or you get your lick of the ice cream and you can whack a few goals on the opposition. So in terms of resilience, it's getting through those scenarios so that if you're 5 goals down with 10 minutes to go, well, the next 10 minutes does matter. You don't want to get in and have an 8-goal, 9-goal loss. Can we peg it back to 2 or 3 and fight the game out? So I think it's making sure we're aware of those situations and reviewing it.
I guess it's also about the mechanics of, say, stopping a stem of, you know, stemming the flow of goals is also about also almost mindfulness in a sense, so that players get to read that situation where things are getting out of control and automatically slip into the structures you need on the ground to prevent that bleeding getting any worse rather than sort of waking up when it's too late.
That's right. And it's just been aware of, okay, things aren't going well. And that's that mindfulness part you're talking about, just being in the moment. It's not going well for us, but how can we turn the tables rather than just drift for the next 5-10 minutes where damage is done? So, and giving them a sense that they've got a certain responsibility in those moments to have an impact.
You've had a great range of football influences over both your playing and coaching career, Stewie. I mean, playing in a Port Premiership under Choco Williams, you've been at Hawthorn, seen flags under Alistair Clarkson, then at Sydney under John Longmire. Have you been able to sort of work out as a coach what parts of each of those clubs you've taken with you in your coaching persona?
Long story short, you know, Mark was really, really fantastic at teaching the game and the fundamentals and the doing the basics well. And I think as a young player, I benefited from that. And Clarko had a unique ability to make you feel like the most important player on the team. And he was so loyal to you as a player and as a person that you really would do anything to try and perform for him. Mm. And obviously I was under a bit of pressure given he put his neck on the line. So,
yeah.
But I think that respect I had for him, I guess pushed me towards getting some results. And John really worked well with, I guess, the senior leadership group, and I've probably taken a fair bit of skills out around that. So I think that's quite a short story, but in a general sense, that's sort of where I got to with coaches and influence.
And it covers all bases, I guess, of the coaching mantra too, which is pretty handy. Final one from us before we let you go. I guess the most important quality a side can have heading into a new season is hope. Our last two AFL premiers have been fairy tales of a sort. You know, Western Bulldogs, Richmond, no flag for 37 years. Do you feel like the goalposts have shifted significantly in terms of who can win a premiership?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I think what those last two premiers has done, you know, they've given the whole football world hope, and I think that's important. And it's certainly what the AFL would love and support it in general. So clubs that are down the bottom six certainly know that it's possible. Now it's about actually getting a process right and putting the effort in to make it possible, which those two clubs clearly made a decision. And I'm not just talking about the players, but the club as a whole made a decision of around, okay, how do we get ourselves going and really aligned and get up the pointy end? And all credit to them.
Well, all the best for this year. It's going to be fascinating to watch your journey and the journey of your new club. Thanks for the chat, mate. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate that, Rowan. We'll chat again.